Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday here. Victory Friday. We're celebrating all week long. Don't you snicker. Don't you scoff at me.
You're more of a 126-hour guy.
I am. However many hours there are in a seven-day period, that's how many hours we're celebrating Jaguar Victory Week is what it is, right? Come on, man. It's been a month and a half of the season. I think Jag fans, look, we don't have to be like the coaches. We don't have to break down the film. We don't have to worry about the game plan for next week, get ourselves mentally prepared. They're going to do what they're going to do regardless of us. So let's enjoy it on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. How you doing?
Good. Interesting game coming up, I think, Sunday is Miami. They haven't been able to win two in a row. Obviously, the
Correct.
Jags haven't. So, say, what Miami team do they see? Do they come in here feeling, hey, this is a chance to go 4-3 with San Diego coming in next? Or do they come in here, which I think Cleveland came in last week, maybe just a little bit of show up and win?
Yeah, right. I think that's exactly what, look, you're not hoping for that, but it doesn't hurt if somebody wants to come in and look ahead a little bit to the next opponent or maybe not take you mentally as toughly as they need to. They're a pretty good team. I mean, they're capable. They've knocked off New England this year. They played tough against good competition, but they've also been blown out a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I think that's kind of the meat of the NFL, isn't it? I mean, that big, thick middle section of the NFL, any given week, you shouldn't be that surprised when one of them beats another.
Yeah, I mean, you got two teams here who one's going to show they can handle some prosperity. The other one's going to maybe fall back down to earth a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the game last week, I thought, hey, maybe the Jays got a chance to win two straight. But you look at how banged up they are in defense. I think it's going to be tough. We can get the predictions later, but this is a tough matchup in a lot of spots.
Well, I think that's the thing. We will get to the particularly missing Posluszny and Andre Branch on that side of the football. What does it do mentally, though, for a football team? I think the fan base mentally feels so much better, so much more optimistic about the second half of the season. I'm not saying they think they're going to rip off the next, you know, eight games in a row or anything like that. Do you think the players, even though they say we believe in victory, we believe we can win, nothing's ever changed, you could see there was a great sense of relief last week. Now that they've got that, they think that, all right, now that's what it feels like to finish off a game. Can they actually benefit from having won last week? Does that have a tangible impact?
I think it has a gigantic impact, and you hit the perfect word because that's what I led my story with in Monday's paper. I asked guys, was it excitement or relief? They said, oh, it's excitement. What are you talking about? BS. Because the longer you keep losing games, the more you're going to see the offer up there. So, first win's relief. Then you think when you get that second win, then you can be excited. But the effect may not be immediate. But I think maybe they play after the bye. Does it allow them to win one or two games more? Maybe because they're not going to be gripping so tight.
Right.
You can imagine what this building would have been like if they're 0-10 coming off the bye.
Oh, we don't have to. But you're right. I mean, because then all of a sudden, the worst case scenario is in sight, and nothing anybody ever really wanted to contemplate.
Yeah, so you can relax knowing that's not possible. But also, maybe it's just the human subconscious is you can focus on just getting another win instead of, oh my God, how are we gonna get a first one?
Was the way they won important to you? We talked about this a lot this week, but to give you a chance to weigh in on this, the fact that Blake Bortles wasn't as good as we've seen him at times, maybe his worst game. I mean, it's a small sample size, but
statistically, it was his worst.
Yeah, it wasn't sharp in particular. He had his moments, certainly the two-minute drive at the end of the first half in particular, but you're in another situation where you get late in this football game, you're like, man, how many opportunities are we going to let slide by? All it takes is one play by Cleveland to take back the lead, and who knows what happens at that point. But the defense really never caved. The running game finally came around, and you found you could win without the guy who's been the most exciting offensive player for you performing at his best.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to break this one into segments because, starting with, it doesn't matter how they win the first one, just get it. Talk about we can nitpick in the days following. From a Bortles standpoint, it was a positive that he was able to handle some adversity, put the two-minute drill together, make a couple plays in the second half, on third down. So that was a positive. On defense, that they're finally able to create multiple takeaways in a game for the first time since week one, so that was good. And then I think the big thing was the running game, is they gained 13 yards on the first carry of the game and never really let up after that. So, you know, if you measure the worth of the takeaways, the first one is the win. I think the second one is, have they maybe found something up front on offense? And then, you know, a little bit further down the line, is the quarterback bounce back from some bad interceptions?
I'm going to be interested to see what they do against the run defensively this week. Cleveland came in running the ball very well. We talked, though, about the loss of Alex Mack and what that would mean for them. I thought it was evident right from the jump. I mean, they got penetration and push defensively right in the middle of that Cleveland offensive line. That's how you play in the NFL, though. And people have been taking advantage of the absence of Mercedes Lewis, right, in the run game and the pass game. So that's just the nature of the National Football League. That's not to take away anything from what the Jags did. But Lamar Miller's run the ball well as well this year. And I think with Tannehill, particularly over the last 3 weeks, you got Mike Wallace, who scored 5 touchdowns this year. I think they've got more balance to their offense than Cleveland was bringing in.
Yeah, and, you know, they clearly have better receivers. You know, with Hartline, Wallace, and the rookie Landry, all those second-round picks along with Robinson and Lee, you know, Gus said on Wednesday they expect the Miami to go 3 wide a lot, so that puts Telvin Smith on the field for most of the game as a nickel guy.
Which might not be a bad thing.
Exactly, and I think, you know, just for fans watching, I would also look for Geno Hayes to play that second linebacker spot in nickel, so Geno and Telvin on the field at the same time. A little bit of a change from having a, you know, instead of JT Thomas being out there, but digressing is, Dolphins offensive line is still trying to get things figured out too. I mean, moving Mike Pouncey from center to guard, you know, Samson Sistaly is a center who's been around. So where the Jags get that run defense established is they just push guys back in the middle. So control the interior of that line. But I think the key thing with the Miami running game, this is the first time they're facing a legitimate read option. Griffin was going to run it all day against these guys in week two before he got hurt.
Sure.
So, you know, Clemens and Bryant have to be pretty disciplined on early downs for that read option.
Yeah, Tannehill's a pretty athletic quarterback.
For a big guy.
Yeah, exactly. And much like Bortles, he's had his ups and downs, but like we said, over the last 3 games, I think he's come on. Jags defense as a whole, giving up 10.2 points per game over the last 3, which is the best in the NFL on that stretch.
Unfathomable.
Compared to the first month of the season, what you saw? Right.
That they, I mean, they were so bad in the first month of the season, they needed games like this to even become a little bit on your numbers game. I mean, they're going to be skewed a little bit, but going from 32nd to 15th in run defense over a span of 4 games, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is, and we'll talk about some of the reasons for that. I know you talked with the Robert Saleh, the linebackers coach, about what the impact the loss of Paul Posluszny will mean for this football team. I think you just gave us a glimpse into how they may try to cope with that as Geno Hayes becomes more, I guess, of an every down guy right now.
I think he will be. I mean, I think a lot depends on the game and, you know, how they feel Thomas is handling things. I mean, early in the game in nickel, you could see Thomas and Telvin out there and, you know, maybe give and Geno had been playing some nickel with Posluszny, so it's not going to be totally foreign to him. But I think they're going into this game with a pretty open mind, is how did the week of practice go? And they feel like they got their guys schooled up pretty well.
What do they miss most about Posluszny? Is it getting guys lined up? You know, just the knowledge of the defense? Is it the intangible that we call leadership? You know, the rallying the troops aspect? Or is it the actual physical play, great downhill run stuff? Or, you know, look, he's got his limitations in coverage, but a lot of middle linebackers do. What aspect will they miss most, in your opinion?
Ranking those 3, I'd say the first one is communication. The second one is his play. Great game on Sunday when he got hurt. And the third one would be leadership, because there's other guys who can pick up that void, a lot of veterans on that defense. So you talk to Derek Marks, I talked to him on Monday. I said, hey, on pause, are you saying, hey, next man up? And he looked at me, he goes, this is pretty big. Yeah, that told me, hey, this was their backbone.
I appreciate them admitting that, because Gus said the same thing this week. He came in and joined us this week on Jaguars Today, and they just didn't give it that lip service of next man up stuff, because clearly the next man up is the next man for a reason, because he's behind the first guy. I mean, almost always that's the case. That's not a knock on JT Thomas, who I'm excited to see play because he's played well recently. He says he feels more at home playing middle linebacker than he does outside. So, you know, he may pleasantly surprise us, but there are going to be aspects, I think, when we look up and say, yeah, they could have used Posluszny right there.
Yeah, you know, like in the first quarter, do they call a defensive timeout? I mean, do you see guys still running around pre-snap like you did in the first couple of games of the year? You know, little nuances that if you look for, maybe it may be apparent.
All right, we'll get into Andre Branch, his absence as well, what the Jags might do to game plan against the Miami Dolphins this week as they go for victory number 2 on the season and a winning streak. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? The Fan Feedback Spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. As we do every Friday, we ask you to give us your 3 keys to victory. You can tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL. Lauren, 1010XL Fat Tony, is on assignment today. So he's got the day off. He'll be back next Monday. And also you can post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Weigh in with your keys to victory and somebody will go home with a Jaguars Today t-shirt. It's called Nolan Cadillac Friday. Just getting started. You want to talk Jag football all morning long? 641-1010, the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Luke keeps progressing. You know, he's truly getting better, you know, and now this week poses a whole new challenge for him. This is an area for Luke that he needs this type of challenge. I think for him, you know, this type of speed, the power to be able to anchor, it's a great opportunity for him.
That's Gus Bradley last night here on 1010XL. Gus Bradley show every Thursday, along with Jeff Logman, as says Luke Jokel needs to kind of step it up against the Dolphins pass rush. Cameron Wake, the bigger name, Olivier Vernon, pretty good guy on the other side as well, and may match up more with Vernon than he will with Wake throughout the course of this game. But, you know, talking to guys like Logs and Baselli, they give more praise, Jokel, for his work in the run game than they do in the pass game. Still more of a work in progress. You know, less than a year. Less than a full season's worth of starts. Mm-hmm. So, not getting crazy with it. But where do you think he is in his development?
It was interesting. I remember talking to Tony about this before the Tennessee game. And one thing I asked him, and, you know, is for a guy like Jokel, what areas he's supposed to be better in at this point? Because he played in a spread his last year at A&M. So, he's a pass protector. And, or was a run blocker. And he basically, you know, he said the same thing as, you know, he does some really good things in the run game. In the pass blocking thing, it's about his technique and, you know, setting his feet and trusting it instead of just trying lunge and stuff. So, I mean, I think in pass protections where you really notice him when he gets beat, he hasn't gotten beat in the last couple of weeks. You know, I won't go as far as say as Gus did it on purpose, but he pretty much publicly challenged Jokel a couple of weeks ago. It says, you know, we want to raise that bar a little bit. So I think he's done it in pass protection. And in the run game, whenever you go for 140, it's probably across the board pretty good.
Yeah, as I think Prosser put it this way earlier in the week, if we're going to kill them when they can't run the ball, got to assume they did fairly well up front when they had their best running game of the year.
Yeah, and, you know, Jokel's a part of that because they weren't just – they were running – up the middle, right, left.
Right.
So it's, and, you know, I think he does a decent job getting out in the screen game, too. So, but big test this week.
Yeah, and well, the one thing that they've consistently praised him for is the raw material, right? The good feet, you know, the athletic ability. So you would hope having that trumps having the technique right now because you can refine the technique. You can't learn those traits that athletically that he has. So.
And you know, guys use the phrase "trust your," you know, "trust the technique." Or whereas if you make a bad step, continue on instead of panicking and trying to rely on your athleticism. That gets you even more trouble because you're reaching and you lose your balance and stuff like that. But it. I mean, one thing that Jed Frisch brings up on a weekly basis is really, you know, this is what. So 5 games, this is it. So 13th game coming up this week. So, you know, he's a work in progress. They thought he'd probably be a little further ahead in the first couple weeks of the season, but maybe he's getting back on track.
Yeah, and of those 13, close to half, maybe not close to half, but a portion of those on the right side as well. The technique's going to be different as well than what he's doing right now. By the way, first song of the day, Jay Giles Band, Love Stinks. Anything?
Everything all right, Lauren?
I was wondering if you were going to ask that. Yes, everything is fine. Thank you.
Fortunato suggested that might be the issue, but you're saying that's not the case.
I'm just saying it's a music theme. That's all I'm going to give
you.
All
right, well, we're going to need more help than that.
All right.
Good. That's the way I like it.
That's all we got so far. Lauren's proud of herself because she came up with this one, not on the fly. She actually planned this one out today. So I'm proud of her as well.
Thank you.
I can't tell if she's happy with this.
Hey, by the way, what do you have tonight? Do you have high school football tonight?
I sure do. Going to Yulee for BK Yulee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very nice. Everyone's traveling today. I guess Yulee's mm-hmm. not quite as far as St. Pete. That's
no.
where Balls Davis has to go to call the game tonight.
Yes, that's why I will be taking over Balls Davis's 10-10 at 10 today.
No. Got to look for that as well. All right. Jokel, talking about the offensive line and getting the running game going. Denard Robinson, deservedly getting a lot of praise this week. Not so much to me for the numbers, but for the way he got those numbers, right? I mean, look, when the holes were there, he hit the holes, but he broke hand tackles, broke arm tackles, pushed guys forward, was stopped a couple of times. Didn't stop driving his legs, was able to fight, even if it's for an extra yard or two. You didn't see him getting knocked backwards here. I thought he ran tougher than probably anybody would have expected him to, maybe at any point this season, and to see him do that in his first start was pretty encouraging.
It was, and it started right off the hop with that 13-yard run. And you hit on the big thing is there, you know, the first month of the season, there were just too many negative rushes, too many no gains. And last week he had 22 carries. 8 went for 6 or more, which is clearly impressive, but only 5 of 22 went for 2 or fewer, which means he was falling forward for a couple yards. If there was if he needed to get 4 yards on 2nd and 3, he got it. So all encouraging signs. It's going to be interesting to see the rotation work on Sunday with Gerhardt back. Gus said yesterday Denard would probably be the starter. That could mean he comes off the field on second down, you know, so.
But you would think
he's that, earned the yeah. he's earned call the ball, so to speak. He's earned the right to get another shot.
I think he would earn the right to get the lion's share this week and see. Now, obviously, if he's getting stuff, then you put Toby in for a series and he rips off a bunch of runs, you might go with the hot hand. But
yeah. I'd use Toby on third down then.
That's what we've been talking about for a while now, right? I mean, that's a role that he excelled in Minnesota. If you could get Denard and keep him in that 15 to 18 carry range, I'd like to see him get more involved in the passing game as well, you know, just kind of round out his presence as, not to use the term in the old way, but as an offensive weapon, you know, as a running back who can do different things. And that's certainly one of the things I think he's capable of doing, because as much as I was impressed with him running between the tackles, you still want to get him one-on-one with guys or in a little bit of space, because he does have the long speed to break it. And I don't think too many of the guys toting the rock here have what he has in that department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you go Denard on first and second down, you know, Gerhardt will see some early down work, some third down work. So, I mean, Todman, no carries last week. I think you're seeing him being eased out of the rotation.
What's your sense with Toby and how healthy he actually is?
Well, I came up yesterday with the head coach, and Gus said that he looked like a different back yesterday in practice. So I think they made the right call in retrospect. Should they have done that right away? Probably so, after his week one injury. Shut him down like they did with all these hamstring guys. So, you know, Gus said he had his burst back. Obviously, he looks healthy. And I think, you know, he tried to play through it, and they finally said, okay, it's, you're not doing anybody any good here.
It's tough, though, when you're expected, you come in, you're expected to be a guy, you miss time in the preseason. Mm-hmm. You do have these wide receivers who are missing time right now, and you're like, man, if I go out, what, you know, I almost have to be in there. And so he's trying to fight through it. And it's a losing battle, because if you don't have, you know, he's not the biggest burst guy we've got on this football team or in the National Football League to begin with. And when you're hampered by a couple of multiple different lower leg injuries, mm-hmm. it's not going to look the best. The one thing, you know, Denard, 20-yard carry was his long. Allen Robinson had the 31-yard catch. Clay Harbor had a 24-yard catch. Todman, although you're right, he didn't get any carries, caught that 26-yarder, which converted a key third down. And you had Marquise Lee, his only grab went for 20 yards as well. So just in the offense, you had 5 guys with what they term explosive plays or 20 yards or more. That's been something that's been missing for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, I had under their definition, which would be a 12-yard run, 16-yard pass, they had 9 in the game. Interesting part is they had 5 passes and 4 runs. Going into the game, they had 4 explosive runs the whole season.
Right.
So, you know, they're still way behind the opponent, but that's going to happen. But, you know, having 9 to the Cleveland's 5, but like you said, 31 for the touchdown, 26, 24, 20, 20, 18, 16, 14, 13. That moves the sticks, that scores points, that keeps the ball.
Yeah, and you also had A. Sanders with a 20-plus yard punt return, which, you know, it changes field position for you. And they did play ahead in that regard to the point where they could turn it over. You know, Blake throws 3 interceptions, and only one of them leads to any points, and that's because the one happened to be already in pretty point-blank field goal range.
I mean, even before those last couple turnovers, the field position was the exact opposite of what it was in Tennessee the week before.
Right. Yet still, you're sitting on 10 points for an awfully long time in that football game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's up until the fumble punt, I was expecting Cleveland to win the game. You know, but they recovered that punt. They punched it in right away. You know, then you sort of say, would that make it 17-6?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was for as many great statistics as they were on both sides of the ball, it was a close game for 45 minutes.
Right. Still struggling to put the ball in the end zone.
Yeah.
Is the bottom line. And until very late, 17 was still the high watermark for the season. So you got to find a way to do that a little bit earlier. I know you're not a big fan of the Pro Football Focus group, but they did the rankings of all the skill position guys in the National Football League, like the support guys for the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs. Where do you think the Jags would rank in such a list?
Last week's game or overall?
Overall.
32nd.
32nd is exactly where they are. I mean, and that's, I think that's not a reflection of necessarily where they could be, because I think you look at a lot of teams and you're like, well, that's what they've got and it's not going to get any better. The hope is here that this group, as is going to get better and grow all at the same time. But right now, I mean, that's not to say they're not good players. It's just they're not anywhere near, hopefully, where their potential is ultimately going to be.
I mean, right now this offense is a classic case of 1.5 steps forward, 2 steps back. You know, you make a play to get downfield and you turn over. I mean, you mentioned not finishing drives. You know, early third quarter, they get to the 12, settle for a field goal. Next possession, I think they get to the 14, the Bortles interception, which at the time you thought it was a killer.
It potentially was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't know how the rest of the game's going to play out. That's a mistake you absolutely can't make.
So that was 3 points off the board. So this is not going to be a statistically great looking offense, I don't think, for the rest of the year, because there's going to be turnovers, there's going to be bad red zone drops, etc.
At what point does it concern you? I mean, it's only been 4 starts, so it's not concerning to me now, but 5 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, if that ratio holds for another month, another, you know, the rest of the season, at what point is that become a concern? Because, you know, as Bortles will tell you himself, look, it's not all rookie mistakes. It's just sometimes, you know, you can't make that play as a quarterback on any level that he made. It's 3rd and 5. You're already running full speed towards the line. You're a good running quarterback. You might be able to pick it up. If at the worst case scenario, you got a chip shot extra point length field goal right there to put you up 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they say, and I wrote about this Thursday's paper, I divided it up into 4 categories, and you know, if you see repeated interceptions like that, then that's a concern. To me, it's a high number already, because you look at the other starting, only Peyton, his first 5 games, he had 12. That's the only one that's exceeded that amongst guys who currently start. Alex Smith had 10 interceptions too. So those kind of interceptions, you know, the bad luck stuff, when you're throwing 40 times a game, that's going to happen, you know, and rookie decisions, but I mean, you start seeing 3-3-3-3, then it's like, okay, what's going on here? But they say they're not concerned. Personally, he's moving the ball well enough where he can overcome some of that stuff.
And part of it, I think, too, is you look at some of these other guys. I mean, even Peyton and Marvin Harrison when he came in. Blake doesn't have anything comparable to that, right? Right. I mean, so you have different weapons around these guys. Surprising, because I saw your story. Alex Smith, very much had the reputation of being an ultra-conservative guy early in his career, yet all those interceptions, you know, Blake He's going to take some chances. We've seen that he's taken some of his interceptions are on those, you know, balls. He's taking shots down the field, and he's kind of thrown into coverage. But those aren't the ones that are going to kill you most often. As long as you know, you give your receiver a chance to break it up. A and if he doesn't, if you tackle him on the spot, you know, if you're taking a shot on third down, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you look at you know, moving forward, like it's almost like let's keep a separate category for interceptions that occur in their 20 or the Jags 20.
Right.
The Pittsburgh one returned for a touchdown ball game. The one against Cleveland inside their 10 when they intercepted it, same deal. If you know, avoid those two areas. I mean, the ones where you're throwing it downfield, it turns into a long punt. You know, that's going to every quarterback's going to throw one of those. So it's just you know, it's the killers that are going
to. Phillip Rivers threw one last night, as a matter of fact, to Malcolm Floyd, or taking a shot to Malcolm Floyd. 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you Jaguars Today every Friday. We'll continue to take a look at where the Jags stand now. 1-6, getting ready for the Miami Dolphins. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up as well. This date in football history and a lot more. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
He did have surgery, and it went very well, extremely well. He sent us a text with him at a computer with a notepad. He was watching tape about 2 hours after surgery, which isn't surprising. I mean, the guy's relentless, you know, so hopefully we see him soon back here. And I know the players will appreciate it.
Gus Bradley on Paul Posluszny last night on the Gus Bradley Show here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, Commodore's Brick House. I got this now, okay?
I'm so proud of you.
You had Love Stinks,
mm-hmm.
You had Brick House, mm-hmm. Right? So now that Kevin Love is in Cleveland, he's going to be firing up bricks, and it will be a bad acquisition for LeBron's new team.
Okay, that's definitely not it.
No.
No? That made perfect sense.
If I did anything NBA related, you would throw a pie at my face.
I wouldn't. Others might, but I wouldn't. I like the NBA, just like Ryan likes pro wrestling. And not as much as Ryan likes pro wrestling, mind you, but I do like the NBA.
Oh, I thought you really got it. You didn't get it?
No, I thought I had it. It's not Kevin Love.
No.
Love Stinks, Brick House.
Ryan, nothing. You got anything?
Nothing.
All right.
We must protect
I am so happy.
Stinky house.
I was telling everyone last night at the Rush that I was going to stump everyone today with the music theme, and I'm so glad.
Were you? Was that a big topic of conversation last night at the Rush?
It absolutely was.
A slow night at the Rush, apparently.
No. It's just that's how exciting Jaguars Today music themes are.
Oh. O'Halloran, you got anything?
No.
He was thinking. I think I took his.
I was thinking of some shtick about, must have been a, you took it, slow night at the Rush.
Yes.
With no Florida State players.
Which is atypical, by the way, because the Rush second only to Helmets and Heels, I think, and high school football. Whatever Lauren's involved in. Like, Jaguars Day is like fourth on the list.
Whatever.
You find that out every time she goes to the parking lot for pregame.
Well, no. And also at 9:59, I'm here!
He just called you out. He just called you out for being late to the party.
But I'm never late. I'm just elsewhere in the building working on my music themes.
I gotcha. It's all good.
Shut it down, O'Halloran.
We're here. It's Happy Mike Week. Seeing if I can make it for another, what would that be, another hour and 20? I think I can. I think I can make it, and then all bets are off after that. Gus talking about Paul Posluszny there said he's already watching film. I don't know what the hell he's watching film. I guess maybe if he's going to be coaching up some of these guys, maybe he's going to help JT Thomas in film study. Hey, Paul, you're not playing this week.
Well, it's funny as he said that because, like, on Monday, Paul was in the locker room, and he cleaned his locker, just immaculate. And he said, well, I got here this morning. He goes, I didn't need to watch any Miami tapes. So I decided to clean my locker. But these guys are creatures of habit. I'm sure he just wanted to get back in the building and, you know, see if he can, you know, help at all.
It's got to suck when you're a player and a good player and you're so integral to a team. And you get hurt because they always say out of sight, out of mind, man. Mm-hmm. These guys that go on IR and they're not around. So it'll be interesting to see if he is around a lot and trying to help this linebacker core. And if he is, I think that reflects very well on the climate and the culture that they're building here, that you, a guy like that would want to be a part of that, even if he's not able to play.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be here. I mean, his full-time residence is here. So he had the surgery Wednesday morning. So, I expect him to be around a lot.
Do you expect him to be around a lot going forward?
Yes.
Mean, that's the question. Plenty of cap space for this team, but he's got 7.45, I think, on each of the next 2 years of his contract. Any question to you that he's a part of this football team moving forward?
There is no question because of his importance to the defense and, you know, a loyal guy. I think next year he plays at his current wage. There's no reason to renegotiate. And I see him being here long term as long as he stays healthy.
As long, so even a contract beyond this, if he can get back to health,
at a reduced rate,
obviously. But I mean, at that point, he's made his money. You know, he's made a good change. Not that you always don't want as much as you can get, but
well, it's very rare that a guy like him plays out that an entire deal like that.
Right.
So then after that, anything else is a bonus.
Well, you know. You look at the linebacking core, and we said that's one area they're going to maybe have to address. Depends on how some of these young guys play. But if you're taking out the heart and soul of it, you don't want to just add one more piece to have to replace.
Yeah, and one thing that the Jags have said, and they talk about other guys in this way too, is if they add good players at other spots on the defense, it'll raise a guy like Puzzlesny's play up, and which I thought he's been playing pretty good the last 3 weeks. So if you team him with Telvin Smith and a new outside linebacker next year who's a little younger and more athletic, that will allow Paul to make more plays. You know, same with the defensive line who's being effective. He's making a lot of stops in the run game because he's not being blocked. That's because the guys up front are taking those guys off.
And, you know, those guys up front really, that on any football team, any defense, that's what's going to make it go on the linebackers and the back end as well. How do you think that? I thought the secondary played well last week. I mean, the defense as a whole, I thought, it clearly had its best game, even taking it up a notch from the two previous weeks. But specifically the secondary, what are you seeing in the recent weeks?
Well, it seems like Josh Evans has, you know, stabilized some things. One thing, you don't see 15-yard penalties from the back end. You know, so
Winston guy, right?
Or fine. So, I mean, Josh took a bad angle on the 65-yard catch, which was that rare drive where a defense gives up a 65-yard catch and then forces a punt.
Yeah.
How often does that happen? But I think
that's a great point. Honestly, how often does that literally happen?
It's like, get Elias on that one.
If that happens 10 times in an NFL season, wouldn't you be surprised?
I'd be surprised.
I mean, because
I'd say 5 times.
Right. If you're starting from your own 5-yard line, you hit a 65-yard, you're already in field goal range.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's pretty amazing.
But, digressing. On the secondary is, McCray's been obviously serviceable. You know, Grotz, I think, is going to get the start with, you know, I don't think Ball is going to play. I bet they rule him out later today.
He's like, this is a concerning injury. Yeah. You know, he says, you know, not necessarily season ending, but even the fact that that's possible, I think, is a concern.
Yeah, and so let's say he's out a couple weeks. I would foresee him maybe being out the next 3 games and then giving him the bye, which gives him a month off then.
Right.
So you got 4 second-year guys starting on Sunday in secondary with Cyprian, Evans, Grotz, and McCray. And what they've done is they've tackled better after the catch, and also they've avoided the monster penalty, and they've kept a lot of things in front of them.
What's the biggest threat to this defense from Miami? Is it Lamar Miller, or is it Mike Wallace giving you a quick 6 down the field, or at least a big chunk over the top?
I think the deep ball, and I think Charles Clay, the tight end, ran some good routes against Chicago, so he's a concern. But I think this team has given up big plays off play action. So if Lamar Miller gets going, then it leads into that. Guys are too aggressive. So I think there's a couple of things to be concerned about.
Well, and that's the thing that they were able to do successfully against Cleveland was take them out of those play action opportunities. So much of what they do is predicated on play action, the ability to run the football. So if they're able to stuff them up front, they got a chance to shut down some of that. How much will they miss Andre Branch?
I think they'll miss him. Obviously, he has I think 3 sacks this year, second on the team, and you're going to miss him because he's basically going to be replaced by a rookie, Chris Smith, who hasn't played at all this year. So, Ryan Davis has played inside on those third down pass rushing packages. I think that's going to remain the case. He may slide outside a little bit, but I think Andre was having a productive season in as well as a run defender. So, you know, he was. I think it is a loss.
So, will it be if Ryan Davis remains inside? Will it be Chris Smith as the natural replacement on the edge? Is that what you're
I think he'll get some snaps. I think Chris Clemens better be ready to play more overall. But they don't really, I mean, you know.
Do you try to mix Dakota Watson in?
That's what I was just going to say. If Watson isn't playing a lot as a linebacker because of what Miami's throwing out there, that's what you saw against Cleveland as Watson took some of those Leo snaps. So you could see Watson and Clemens as the Leos, Chris Smith and Clemens as the Leos. And then inside, it'd still give you Cindric Marks and then Ryan Davis.
Anytime you get sacks, you're a defensive end. People notice, say, hey, wow, you're having a good game. Chris Clemens has had sacks three consecutive weeks. He must be playing well. Do you agree with that? As an overall, has he picked up his play, or has he just been right place, right time on a few occasions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not buying Clemens stock as much as other people. But, you know, the numbers, his sack against Tennessee last play of the first half, his sack against Cleveland last drive of the game, up 24-6. So, you know, I'm waiting for the impact ones. So
I hear you. Yeah. But still, this team has lacked that in recent years, even in obvious pass rush situations. You know, and that's what you got Cleveland towards the end of the football game. You go back, really, that whole game swings on Mike Pettine's decision to not kick the field goal at the end of the first half, in my opinion, right? Because it gives you a bolt of energy. You go down. And now, instead of, who knows what you do if they kick, it's 9-0, they kick it deep, maybe you're taking over at the 20-yard line, maybe you get a field goal out of it, maybe you don't, maybe you get a touchdown, but either way, you're trailing in the game, you open up the second half going 3-and-out. So if it's 9-0 at the half and you go 3-and-out, it could be a completely different football game.
Yeah, I mean, Pettine showed a complete lack of awareness as a rookie head coach. Is 9-0 over this team, it was like 19-0.
The way the offense was playing.
Yeah, like it was like 19-0, but also, He underestimated how much of a jolt this team would have gotten from a 7-6 lead. They did.
Yeah.
Crowd got excited. Defense made that fourth down stop. Offense rewards them. So I think a total misplay. And then the debacle on the fourth down fake punt that was a run that wasn't supposed to be snapped. I mean, it's just amateurish.
Do you give Gus some credit there? Because, you know, we knocked him the week before. There's game management issues. But here's the situation. He knew the situation in terms of what you're allowed to do substitution-wise. And even though Dakota Watson was trying to sprint off the field because he thought he was the 12th guy, and he was
so surprised. My joke was he was so surprised he was out there for a defensive snap. He said, "I gotta get the hell off the field."
I can't. I must be in the wrong place. But you know, Gus didn't call the timeout. And you got the sense maybe Cleveland—that's all they wanted out of that situation was to force the Jags to use their last time out there.
Yeah, and that's what Pettine said. He said the ball wasn't supposed to be snapped. Well, I give Gus credit because he was right on the line of scrimmage, a little further on the field than he should have. And when he saw them run off field, he just held up both hands. Because he knew that he was being allowed to switch personnel.
Right.
Okay, so everybody calmed down. I think they did a quick head count. Granted, I bet they were worried when they saw a guy running off the field. But I think he knew what his timeout situation was. Because if you call that last timeout, not only do you not have it, you can't challenge anything either.
Yeah, we'll get into coming up later on as well your thoughts on the whole – 2-minute aspect of the offense is where Blake Bortles has seemed to shine at times. And is it too much to ask of all these rookies to continue to put themselves in that fast-paced situation? Because they seem to be having success. I get that question a lot. Why don't they just go to that more? We'll discuss that coming up. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran. We've got This Date in Football History, the Honda drive around the NFL as well. New quarterback in Tennessee to pick on. And Claude Nolan bringing you the show every Friday. Since 1905, they've served as the preferred Cadillac dealer right here in Northeast Florida with the largest selection of new or pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And by the way, Claude Nolan Cadillac, the only Cadillac dealer here in North Florida, selling and servicing the ELR. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any model. They're guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance an experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. Build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com or stop by and see them at 4700 Southside Boulevard, 642-5111. Gets you on board with Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, this state in football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. It was on this date, October 24th, 1943, when the Green Bay Packers intercepted a record 9 passes in their 27-6 victory over the Detroit Lions. I'm guessing the Lions quarterback situation may have changed. I'm not sure about that. I have no idea who the Lions quarterback was at that time. 1971, Texas Stadium opened up as the Cowboys beat the Patriots by a score of 44-21. And on this date, 1926, Y.A. Tittle was born, would go on to win league MVP, and the iconic shot of him.
Bloody mess
on the sidelines for the New York Giants is one of the lasting images of the NFL. And Corey Dillon, who it was this week, it might have been yesterday, in fact, that he ran for 278 yards to break Walter Payton's record at the time of 275 in a single game. Happy birthday, Corey Dillon, born in 1975.
Where did he play? University of Washington?
I think he did. Yeah, then, he was a Husky.
Then Bengals, then Pats.
Correct, Amanda. Okay. Yeah, and the Pats, it's interesting, the Pats have gone completely away. They used to be, in the early Brady days, Belichick Brady days, you had Antoine Smith, and he was a workhorse for them. Then you had Corey Dillon, and he was a workhorse for them. And then it was like, yeah, we'll mix in Kevin Falk, we'll just have a whole bunch of different guys, and that's kind of what they are now, with Ridley out for the year. Vereen ended up being somewhat of a workhorse last week, but Belichick is a guy that I think is the most difficult to predict on a week-to-week basis in terms of who he's going to feature. You're always going to see Gronkowski heavily featured, mm-hmm. but beyond him, could be anybody, and you really shouldn't be surprised if, you know, Shane Vereen, who was the big star last week, could have 5 touches this week. That's kind of how he is.
Yeah, and it's funny how they go to, just a couple weeks ago, they get, you know, whooped by Kansas City on a Monday night, and everybody, the worldwide leader. So this was the end of the Patriots. Nobody else was saying that, Bristol. It was a bad game, and they've come back, and they've you know, won a couple in a row.
At the time, though, their offensive line
was terrible,
and they got the ball run down their throats. Mm-hmm. So it is funny how that happens, and we talk about week-to-week league matchups and all that stuff, but they've since bounced back quite nice.
And they're going to win the division going away just like they have every year.
You look at it and you like, you know, I guess Miami, Buffalo's, you know, been a scrappy competitor. Mm-hmm. I don't see them winning the AFC East. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. You look last night, Denver asserted, I thought, pretty much its dominance over San Diego in the West.
Pretty good statement win.
Yeah, I think, you know, and San Diego had gone into Denver last year and got that done. Best Fence Company brings you this date in football history, their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home, and your family's going to feel protected. You're going to breathe easier knowing that the Best Fence Company installed your new fence, and they'll give you a professional free estimate at your convenience if you call them at 268-1638 or simply visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
All right, speaking of the Denver Broncos last night, 35-21, Peyton Manning looked like his typical Peyton Manning self. He got after the scoreboard operator, wasn't happy with the fact that they were showing alternating shots of him and Phillip Rivers, allowing the crowd to cheer him and boo Phillip Rivers, felt that was disrespectful. That was about the only thing that went wrong last night. Ronnie Hillman, you wonder why he hasn't been playing earlier this year. Monty Ball looked like he was running in mud early in the season compared to Hillman, who looked like he was shot out of the proverbial cannon a few times last night. Wes Welker's kind of fallen out of that game plan, but he's got so many weapons there, man. It is tough to slow them down. I think the biggest thing, Ryan, though, the difference about this Denver team, they have fortified mostly through free agency on the defensive side of the football, and for now, it's paying off. You got Von Miller back. You add DeMarcus Ware, you add Aqib Talib, you add T.J. Ward, guys like that, and all of a sudden you think this is a team that's a little bit more physical. They shut down the Charger running game last mm-hmm. night, which had been running pretty well the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. And that's the major impression that I've seen of the Broncos. Watched them pretty much a lot of the San Francisco game the other night, a lot last night, is just the presence of Talib downfield. Just doesn't get beat. A couple of the double moves, he didn't buy on them. Downfield, went up in the air, knocked the ball down. So that's a big upgrade over what they had last year when Champ was clearly not himself. And Rodgers, was it Rodgers Cromartie was there?
Yeah.
He, he was okay. So they've upgraded in that spot.
Well, you had, and we remember Raheem Moore as the guy who got burned a couple of years ago by Jacoby Jones when Baltimore went in and beat him in that epic playoff game. He was in position because you had Aqib Talib covering Malcolm Floyd late in the game when San Diego felt like, you know what, we got to score, maybe get an onside kick, get the ball back, we'll be within 7 points. And Talib was in Malcolm Floyd's back pocket on that double move, allowed Raheem Moore to come over and make that interception. So there you go. Closed it out with defense.
And then Von Miller going against the right tackle is fun to see if you're a Bronco fan, and you know, you feel sorry for the right tackle if you're a home the other team's fan. So it's and then you look at Emmanuel Sanders got going. He came through here on free agent last year before he went to Kansas City and then went to Denver and signed with the Broncos. So it was Emmanuel Sanders and Willie Young who signed with Chicago, the only two guys who came through here and didn't get a contract.
Yeah, Emmanuel Sanders, maybe he was right. Maybe they should have valued his services a little bit more. It's certainly Peyton Manning's going to make you look good. He looks good. He just, you can tell by the way a guy moves, what he does when he gets the ball in his hands. It's not all Peyton Manning. Emmanuel Sanders is playing at an extremely high level. Of course, he's not drawing top coverage either, as long as Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas and those guys are out there. Also, Zach Mettenberger, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, going to get the start, and Ken Wisenhunt confirmed this is a benching of Jake Locker. They've moved on from Jake Locker. So now you watch this situation as a Jaguar fan or observer, and all their chips are on a late round guy who's had off the field issues. He had didn't he fail a drug test leading up to the combine? I want to say,
very mobile.
That's kind, right? I mean, O'Halloran versus Mettenberger in a 10-yard shuttle run. I give you a fighting chance in that one. You probably couldn't throw it like he does.
Definitely not.
He's part. Ryan Mallett, kind of, isn't he?
He's going to be a gunslinger.
He's got the huge arm. There's no question about that. I think he can make every NFL throw that you want him to make. The question is, first test, going up against J.J. Watt, maybe Clowney if he's back this week, is he going to be able to do anything with those guys with a complete lack of mobility, or at least that's what we remember him as in college?
Yeah, I mean, from the Titans' perspective, and I'll look at it from the Jags' perspective too, from Tennessee's point of view is, okay, they have, 9 or 10 games left. Find out about Mettenberger, and then decide what you do in the draft. I think it shows that it's a first year coach there, Wisenhunt, so he's comfortable that he can pretty much roll this is a roll of the dice. How it affects the Jags is Locker is a free agent after the season, and I think somebody will give him a shot. So is that a team that would maybe was likely to trade up with the Jags and draft a quarterback? Instead, now they're going to look at a veteran guy. So I think from the Jags' perspective, let's say hypothetically they draft fourth behind Oakland, Tampa, and I don't think the Jets are going to win a lot more games either. So if you're picking fourth, you don't need a quarterback. You want as many teams as humanly possible to be in the market. So you sort of like – you want teams like you don't want a lot of veterans out there. That, you know, you don't want a lot of teams that can solve their problems. So, you know, so that's from the Jags' perspective, and maybe you'll face Mettenberger in week 16. So, interesting timing because of who they're facing. But, you know, anytime you could go the young guy, I go for it.
Yeah, you make a good point because it's not like Tennessee would trade up with the Jags. You're not going to see that. It's going to be very unlikely, at least, I think. We got a question on Twitter a few minutes ago. I don't know if you saw it, about Akeem Ayers, who got traded, I think, for a 6th-round pick to go to New England, and they said, you know, should the Jags have been in on that? First of all, you're not going to see very many trades between division opponents. Because, and secondly, we don't know what Dave Caldwell thinks about Akeem Ayers. He hasn't played this year, really. Yeah. So you got to go on old film, and if you don't envision him as being a pretty good shot to be a building block, because look what they did here with Bolanco, 6th-round pick. You got a starting center who you hope is going to be, if not a building block, at least a part of your top 8 offensive linemen for a while. So those kind of picks are valuable to this team, I think.
And you look at Josh Evans, 6th-round pick 2 years ago.
Right. Well, he's starting right now. Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of the Jags, this GM is not going to trade a draft pick for a veteran.
He'll take shots on guys like that, like he did with Dakota Watson. If Ayers is out there, maybe you sign a guy like that to a 1-year deal, but that's a different story.
I mean, if he's going to trade a draft pick, it's going to be day of, so he can move up and get somebody he really wants.
Right. So. And that's the thing, too, right? You're not always going to spend all your picks. It's what they did this year to get Allen Robinson. It's what they did this year to get Brandon Linder. Having enough picks to have the ammunition to make some of those moves and still leave yourself with enough actual guys that you're bringing in out of a rookie class.
You know, and right now they're at their seven picks, one per round. So it sort of leaves you with not a lot of flexibility. But let's say you do a lot of things in free agency. Maybe that opens you up to allow yourself to trade a fifth-round pick to move up in the third round.
Yeah. So. Do you want to start the Ebola panic today? How do you feel about that?
Sure, let's go.
All right. Paul Allen's a pretty smart guy, right?
$100 million.
Gave $100 million to fight Ebola. He has created the TackleEbola.com website. Paul Allen, of course, the owner of the Seahawks, one of the richest men out there, and probably one of the richest men in the world, but donated $100 million. I just saw our first case of it in New York. And the way I heard it, I was actually listening to NPR. My wife loves the NPR. And so I had it on in the car, and they said, you know, typically this is not a concern because Ebola is only contagious, so to speak, or highly contagious during the stage where you're showing symptoms. So they said it's really only that last 1 or 2 days, which is a reminder of when you start showing symptoms, it's pretty much over for you.
Ah.
Okay. You got that 1 or 2 day window to get your affairs in order. Hopefully not if you're smart like Paul Allen. He's trying to get out ahead of the curve, but I don't think this guy just throws his money around willy-nilly.
Yeah, whenever I see those donations like that, it's always okay. Who's in charge of how that $100 million is going to be?
That's
spent?
That's a good point, right? How much? Right. I was the Live Strong organization, Lance Armstrong's deal
didn't work.
You know what they raise money for? For cancer awareness. Okay, not very little of the money that was raised for Live Strong went to actual cancer research for a cure to help people in that regard. I think we're aware of cancer, are we not, at this point in time? So, anyway, moving on. That is your Honda Drive around the NFL. Coming up, we still look back at the fan feedback spotlight, asking you today to send us your keys to victory, as we do every Friday. It's Victory Friday at the end of a long victory week for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Go to Facebook.com/Jaguars today. You can weigh in there with your keys to victory. You can always tweet them at us as well, at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, and at 1010XL Lauren. Fat Tony's on assignment. And he'll be back with us Monday. In fact, he'll be here Monday. I will not be here Monday. I'll tell you more about that coming up a little bit later on. But coming up next, if you missed him early in the week, Gus Bradley got a chance to join us in the Jaguars Today studio. So we'll let you hear the comments of the head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right. Smells Like Teen Spirit goes along with Love Stinks, maybe. I can understand.
Yes.
Okay.
You want me to help you with Commodores? Break apart the word.
Odor.
There you go.
That is awful. And I still don't know what the... other than...
Smells. Smells, odors, stink.
Smells like victory.
The dolphins stink. Stinkfish. No? Nobody likes it?
That's fine.
Man.
Odor Commodores?
Yeah, I got odor out of Commodores.
Yes, you did.
I'm making you work for it.
Yes, you did.
I told you I've been brainstorming all week.
Wow.
He's,
all right.
He's stupefied. He's so mortified
I am
for me.
I'm stupefied. I'm absolutely stupefied, but very impressed because Nice Mike is still in effect for another, I don't know, 40 minutes or so. So, Lauren, excellent job once
Thank
again.
Thank you.
I thought you had your best week ever.
Thank you.
Of life, really. You're a winner in life.
I dread next week already.
How do you know I'm not going to be Nice Mike again?
Well, if we win, you have to be.
No, I don't have to be. I have not made that pledge. But I would like to be given the opportunity to make that decision. Let's put it that way.
Amen.
So, you know, another victory would probably put me in a very, very good mood. And why should I subject everybody to not Nice Mike, or as I just call it, Mike, right? So that's just the question moving forward. We'll deal with that later. And then I'm off to Europe. So, and all kinds of, nothing can go wrong with that, right? I mean, in terms of the logistics and the broadcast and all that kind of stuff, right? I'm sure everything will go 100% smoothly, just like we anticipate. And that'll be great, right? What time are you leaving for one? Are you leaving straight from Cincinnati, or are you coming back to Jags?
Nope. Leaving Cincinnati Sunday night after the game.
Okay.
Change plans in Detroit, get into London, like 11 a.m. Monday morning.
Okay, so you are basically leaving straight from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Just a flight. You're not coming back to Jacksonville for a couple days. Be there for the whole week.
Yeah.
You got to give me more tips later on. I know the main tip is find the nearest McDonald's. But
yes.
Although I'm told... by a little bird that at the place we're staying, which is this little kind of, little hole in the wall joint called the Grove. Look it up on, the internet, folks. It's just, basically like, dilapidated little rundown shack that they've got on the outskirts of London that they will be, providing, breakfast, lunch, and dinner with the traveling party of yes. which I am a member. So.
Well, I'll be there for lunch. We're staying in town at the media, headquarters.
I'm sure it's much more palatial than the Grove.
Probably not.
The Grove only has like 250 or so acres that it's located on.
But I'm trying to. First of all, don't assume anything's going to work.
Okay, yeah, that's a good start.
So be prepared to call IT and make sure you bring your power adapter.
Kidding me? 1010XL will be there, and we will make sure everything works because that's how we roll. We roll like this as well. Gus Bradley joined us in studio earlier in the week to celebrate the first victory of the 2014 season. Let's listen in as Gus Bradley joins us here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Coach, congrats on the win, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got a million stats going through my head right now. But it's going great. We're in heavy game planning right now, so... Good little break to come and visit with you guys.
Well, good. And we appreciate your time as always, man. And we understand the 24-hour rule, but I think even you, as you said after the game, not supposed to revel in every win, but this was one that you guys felt was probably overdue.
Well, I want to make sure our guys appreciate it. I mean, they have worked extremely hard and put a lot of energy and time into it. And to say, all right, good job, and then move on, I think they need to learn to appreciate all their efforts into it. And we do as a staff. And then it comes to a point in time when you say, all right, now we remember what got us to this point. We remember this feeling. Let's stay true to it, as we go on and prepare for Miami.
The thing that I love the most was you had numerous players in that ball game that got injured and weren't looking to find a way to stay on the sideline. They were looking to find a way to get back on the field as soon as they could.
Well, you know what? I think that tells about their mindset, just how mentally tough our guys are. And, we see it every day in practice, their mental toughness. We see them, how they go about their task. And then to be able to demonstrate that on the field, it's not surprising to us, but something that, again, should be celebrated, their work ethic and the types of players we have.
Yeah, obviously a big loss with Paul Posluszny and Andre Branch. Both of these guys, hopefully Andre can come back before the season's over with. I know the NFL's all about next man up, but speak specifically about how you plan to deal with the absence of these guys if you can.
Well, I know the NFL has that mentality. Hey, next man up, we got to roll. And, and that there's so much truth to that, but I don't want to take away or diminish the fact of how important those guys are to our team. I think that's a little bit of disservice to them in my eyes. So very important to our team. Puz, Brancher, I mean, just like Mercedes, I mean, they have tremendous value in many ways, not just as a player, but the mindset they bring and their professionalism. So we got stung a little bit because of these injuries. But with that being said, we challenge our guys to say, you're defined as a leader by the ability for you to bring the next guy up, and that's what Puz needs to do and has done, with guys like JT and Jeremiah and those guys, when they go in there and they step and they perform at a higher level, that's a credit to Puz and guys like that. So, everybody has their role and it doesn't stop now just because they're injured.
Going back to the preseason, JT Thomas was limited because of an injury and then he had a limited opportunity to kind of show you guys, the staff, what he had to offer. And he did it at Mike. And he had, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he had an MVP type of game, the game that he actually did play at that Mike position.
He really did. Now that you talk about that, it was that last game and he was going to play And he did perform at a high level. And I think we moved him up because of that performance. And, you know, we asked him to learn multiple positions. He's kind of our swing guy, has done that. And then he had a chance at the auto position and really captured that opportunity. And I think helped us as far as playing better defense.
At that auto position, you're not really required to direct a lot of traffic. Going to the Mike position, he's got to be that captain to get everybody lined up in that front seven. Is that something that JT can handle?
Well, that's his personality. I think, you know, that is an important position for us, and it's not just getting to the right gap and making the right drop. You're really setting up the whole defense. And we're fortunate that his personality will reflect that. He takes a lot of pride in it, and I know he's excited about this opportunity for him.
Hey, Coach Gus Bradley here with us live on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Coach, the fans, I'm sure you guys as well, waiting for the running game to get going. All of a sudden, here it comes, right? 22 carries, 127 yards for Denard Robinson. Best game of his career. Offensive line had a very good game as well. We expect Denard will, you know, get the opportunity to show us that he can continue this. Got a question for you today on Twitter from Nathan Morris. He said, if he can continue to kind of be the lead guy, how, once everyone else is healthy, Toby comes back, how do those guys fit into the picture?
Well, it's, you know, if Toby, we'll take a look at him today and see if he'll be able to practice tomorrow. But if he comes in, then, you know, it'll be mostly Denard, and we'll take a good hard look at Toby and see where he's at health-wise. And, obviously, Jordan Tymon's got his role, and Storm is coming along. So we've got some decisions to make, but it'll be based off, you know, how Toby feels and where he's at.
With Andre Branch being out, and you guys go to that lightning package where Ryan Davis is the three technique, and you got Brancher and Clem at the defensive ends. How do you replace Brancher in that? Does Ryan Davis stay as a three? Chris Smith.
I can't tell you that. Jeez, man.
Well, I'm assuming.
Hey, you said you were limiting your questions to very broad.
I'm assuming because at that point in the game when Branch got hurt, Dakota Watson got some reps as a defensive end, and I thought they were quality reps.
Well, I'm going to give you a very broad answer and say that's something that we're putting together now. But you're right, Dakota, you know, that's the auto position, is that we wanted to have a guy there that would have a trait other than just playing auto. Maybe he's an extra third down rusher. Maybe he's an extra, you know, linebacker that can play multiple positions. But he needs to have some trait, and that's what Dakota has. We feel like we really want to develop him to be that guy that, in a time of need, could be a third down rusher. And so we'll take a look at it. We've got some decisions to make. I know we moved Chris Smith up. So we'll take a look at him. But, you know, I would tell you, but it's, I think a lot of it has to do with how practice goes and where we're at and what we think. You know, we've got a couple of days to kind of decide on that.
I'm glad he did it and not me. That's all I can say. Tell us, Gus, Blake Bortles dealing with adversity during the game. Obviously, you trust him to put the ball in his hands at the end of the first half and you don't sit on it there. How did he deal with it throughout the game and since the game, his reaction to, you know, struggling a little bit, obviously?
Well, how about, you know, he's tremendous, man. A really strong competitor, really strong mindset. And, you know, I love that part of him. And I think we demonstrated that when we went back in there and had that two-minute drive, and we said, let's go. We've got tremendous faith in you. You know, there's some mistakes that were made, but learn from it, and let's move on. And that's what he does. Now, after the game, he'll go back and reflect on it. And I just see him, his mindset hasn't changed, his demeanor hasn't changed. He wants to get those things corrected, and that's the competitive spirit he has. And, you know, the team really feels him, and I think, you know, he'll just keep getting better and better.
As bad as a couple of plays that he had and his reaction to those bad plays, but then after that, you never saw the body language linger.
He did, and I know he came off the sideline, and that was one thing that for me to see and watch, and he did. He handled it. I mean, here's a guy that he saw what happened on the sudden change of one of the interceptions where the defense held him, and he went down there and talked to the defense. And it wasn't like, hey, my bad, you know, I'm sorry I put you in that position. That's not his demeanor. He was just like, great job, and walked away. You know, and I think the defense feels that. They know, man, he's just chomping at the bit to get his next opportunity. But at the same time, he appreciates what they're doing and how they handle it.
Yeah, I think that's evident the way they play the defense throughout. Never, you could tell, it never really seemed like they're Man, really? Come on, let's get going here. We need some help on the other side. They always kept them right there, quick change situations. The one time they scored on the turnover, Cleveland, they backed them up 5 yards on right. that play because they already took it over. I just think that that does speak volumes to the fact that this team is pretty cohesive right
well,
now.
Well, and I think this, I think that's the mindset that we're looking for. And that's, you know, our language, the way we speak to the team, it's about, hey, every opportunity that comes up, every situation that comes up in a game, every down that comes up in a game, you got a chance to get better. You've got a chance to get better, and you have a chance to demonstrate you being at your best. So that's their mindset going in those situations. It's not, oh, here's a sudden change. Oh, here's a fumble. Because all that does is causes a distraction. It's purely about going out there and really have a chance to be their best. And I think as we learn this, those situations doesn't faze our team.
One guy that I really enjoyed watching on film yesterday, and you made just a brief mention of him in your press conference yesterday, Avery Jones. I think there was like 4 or 5 tackles that he had in the run game, and then people, and I reminded everybody here on this show here, that Avery Jones was the one who got the pressure on the Telvin Smith interception. I thought he had an exceptional game.
He's really grown. Now, he's a classic example of our team, I think, where you see him in the beginning of the year and you're going, okay, why is he getting so many reps? Why is he getting 25, 30 reps? And he might make a mistake here and there. And we're saying, all right, we're willing to live with this as long as you keep showing us you're growing, as long as you keep showing that you're getting better, because in the long run, it's going to make us even stronger. Kind of like Telvin Smith. Made some mistakes early, but stick with them, help them, keep learning, and then eventually we get a guy that's showing more consistency. And that's what Avery's doing. And, you know, because we've got a lot of defensive linemen playing now, it's helped that position stay strong.
How long did Dave Caldwell have to keep convincing you and Todd Walsh on Avery Jones? Because when he first got here, he was coming off of an ankle injury. But Dave is a guy that saw him back when he was probably a junior before the ankle injury, and probably is telling you, be patient, Gus. Trust me, we saw something with this guy at Georgia back before he had the injury.
Well, that's why it's so important to have communication. And between our scouts and Dave and our staff, he did do that, and he felt very strongly about him. And I think it's a credit not only to Dave but Todd Walsh to say, okay, I trust you. Let's keep working with him, and let's keep building this guy and see what we got here. And doesn't take too long to see some of his traits that you're excited about him.
Final thought for you, Gus, and we appreciate your time again. The fans have been hungry. I'm sure the players have as well, and you and the coaching staff, just to see those results start to pay off in the win-loss column. What was the atmosphere like with the support you got on Sunday?
Well, you know what? I think I've heard some of the interviews, and I've heard a lot of our players talk. They were asked a question, and before they even answered the question, they talked about our fan base and just how important it was. And it was genuine, and it was so true. I mean, the excitement to see our fans and to see the excitement, enthusiasm they bring, we feed off of that. So that part was unbelievable. Then the locker room, great atmosphere, and I think it's important to celebrate that, and because you want that feeling even more when you experience something like that. So hopefully our team will learn, all right, now let's go back to the process so that we can ensure we have a great opportunity for that feeling again.
Let's try it again on Sunday, you know?
I'm all for it.
2 in a row will be fine with everybody here, I think. Gus, good luck. Congrats again on getting that first W. Many more to come.
Okay, thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Gus Bradley, head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars. See if he can get 2 in a row this week as they take on the Miami Dolphins. We appreciate the head coach popping in this week. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran in here with you. We will come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you for your keys to victory. We'll get Ryan's keys as well, as the Jags look to make it 2 in a row this Sunday at Everbank with a 1 o'clock kickoff. Miami coming in. The Stinkfish coming to town. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Yeah, I got it, Warren. I got it, okay? I got it.
Well, once you figured it out, you kind of knew this song was coming, didn't you?
Sure. Maybe if I had thought about it for a while. My brain doesn't work quickly like that. Name a song that would apply to Stinkfish.
Or a song that has smell in it. I think then you would have gone, oh, yeah, Lynyrd Skynyrd,
oh,
that
yeah.
smell.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the best song dealing with smell that I can think of, but I might not have been able to come up with it off the top of my own head.
You say this is better than Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana?
Oh, you kidding me? Nirvana's so overrated. Seriously. Honestly. You know, good music, okay, but if Kurt Cobain doesn't kill himself,
right?
Are they as venerated as they are? Please stop.
Please
stop your nonsense, people. Foundation Professionals of Florida will present a brand new Jaguars Today photo contest beginning Monday. Go to the Facebook page if you'd like to sign up. We've given away tickets to several home games this year already. We'll do so again coming up. So be listening. May I'm thinking about candid shots of Ryan O'Halloran. What can you get? Shots of O'Halloran, or maybe candid shots of the Jaguars media as a whole, but I think then we'd be inundated with selfies taken by Ogier trying to win the tickets himself.
That's a guarantee.
Right?
So
that's
you're also going to get some stalkers is what you're about to get.
I don't. I'm not going to get any.
No, but the media will.
O'Halloran might.
Yeah.
You know, probably the Helmets and Heels ladies would have the most to worry about, I'm thinking.
Nah.
At that point in time. But Foundation Professionals of Florida will take care. If you have any issues with your home's foundation, give them a call at 287-2690. Foundation cracks, windows and doors sticking, interior or exterior wall cracks could all be signs of bigger problems. Find out more by visiting foundationprosfl.com. All right, fan feedback spotlight today. Lauren, we asked for keys to victory. And it's tough finding, continuing to find pictures of three keys on the internet that are different every week. But I went with some gothic-looking stuff today. So they're all there for you at the Jaguars Today Facebook page. What did we get, Lauren Brooks?
All right. Well, hopefully I can do just as well as Fat Tony on this. From Mike, we got number one, Blake Bortles. Number two, Blake Bortles. Number three, Blake Bortles. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Jeremy Smith says, one, have two more. 3 points. That's pretty simple. Mike Wheeler says, stop the run, including quarterbacks, because, of course, Tannehill's a read option. Two, run the ball. Denard equals 100-plus yards. Three, win the turnover battle. Bortles is looking at you. Jaguars Today. We have keep the run game going, keep drops down, keep scoring more from one in DeVille, Jag and Flight. And he says, hashtag half-eaten donuts and hashtag donuts. I'm assuming that's a little Homer Simpson in there. From
I'm assuming that's, yeah, well, it is a little Homer Simpson, donut. But obviously referring to...
Yes, Blige.
We get. You should donut stop addiction. By more often on Wednesday, O'Halloran, if you're hungry. There's a, whatever the ladies from Helmets and Heels are tired of eating, they leave for us as a, quote, gift.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because apparently we can't get through a one-hour show without food.
I didn't even know that show was here. I thought it was at 10.
Oh, no. It's right here in the our home away from home at Everbank Field. What else, Warren? Anything else?
All right, we've got Brandon, solid O-line, balanced offense, continuing the grade-A defensive play. And finally, Christoph, run the ball well again, stop the run, get a winning streak, hashtag not long till Wembley, baby.
All right, on Facebook today, Eric said Blake freaking Bortles, and Josh went with great defense, better offense, good special teams, hashtag simple, hashtag keep it going, hashtag Jaguars Today. Brian said stop the run, run the ball. Bortles protecting the ball, hashtag shut up Randy, hashtag Jaguars Today. And Kenneth
nice.
Said no turnovers but get three. So I'll just go with plus three in the turnover margin. Run, Denard, run. Bortles be a passing fool. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag two in a row sweet. Hashtag Candy Crush. I suppose it's possible that I am a Candy Crush buddy of Kenneth. You ever play Candy Crush? I'm a Candy Crush, just like the lady. I got my hammer. I smash the gobstoppers and whatever she's smashing on the table. That's a great commercial, but I'm like level 360-ish on Candy Crush Saga. That's how I roll. Can I tell you?
You're speaking Chinese to me
yeah.
right now.
Am I really? All right. Well, you know, just a mindless game is that I sit there.
Well, I'm all for mindless games.
That's what it's about. If you got an iPad or a smartphone.
It's solitary guy, usually.
There you go. Keys to victory. Ryan O'Halloran, what you got?
One thing that maybe hasn't been talked about is special teams. Miami can't cover a punt. They're last in the league, and they can't cover a kickoff. They're third to last league. You saw Ace get a little bit of a spark last week. Maybe he turns a 22-yarder into a 40-yarder and plays in that field position we've been talking about. Secondly, you got to be aware of Cameron Wake. He's double-teamed a lot. That hasn't been the Jags' MO in pass protection this year outside of a chip. So if he lines up against Pastor or Jokel, be aware of that matchup. And then a third thing is obviously linebacker play. How are they going to deploy him? And how are they going to play? And I think there's going to be a transition, which is natural, and that's why I'm picking the Dolphins to win.
Yeah, I think you're right about the special teams. We talked about that a few times this week, and it's rarely the focus. We focus on the guys who are on the field the majority of the time, but they have been exceptionally bad in those areas. So, yeah, you get a short punt, you're able to tack on a nice return, all of a sudden flip some field position. I think one of the big things is, man, they just got to be better inside their opponent's 40-yard line. They can't settle for field goals. They've got to, when they get down there, more what we got at the end of the first half last week, and punch that ball in the end zone. And, you know, go ahead.
That's why the fourth quarter was a plus, is they picked it up at the 8, first play, touchdown.
Boom, right.
Next play, the next drive, 2 plays, touchdown, and the third play, and then they took
the That's hands. What they got to do to cap their own drive. So it's one thing when you take over the football that deep in opponent's territory. A lot of times you got them back on their heels or kind of reeling, and they realize, you know, they know nothing good's going to come out of this. Points are likely going to go on the board. But, you know, you start your drives at your 20, your 30-yard line. You go, go, go. Don't stall at the opponent's 40. Let's get it in there. Let's punch it in. Blake's got to be more – I agree with some of these posters today. Got to be more protective of the football, whether that's because of the pass rush with the sack fumble potential or just more likely because he's been pretty good in that area.
Mm-hmm. Zero.
More likely not – you know, just don't throw those killer picks. You're going to – we understand you're a young guy learning on the job. And some of that probably, you know, that second one, Jed Fish talked about, first one's kind of just bad luck. You're getting hit as you throw. Maybe you can get rid of it a half step quicker, but that's kind of nitpicking. The second one, though, Denard Robinson
should have stopped his route, I think.
Right. So miscommunication, and that's part of the overall picture. Denard's a second-year guy playing his most extensive playing time. All these receivers, with the exception of Cecil Shorts, very young. So, you know, you got to be on the same page, and maybe that's why we haven't seen more of the hurry-up, that two-minute stuff, because a lot of people are asking that. Every time they get in it, it seems like things click and they're able to move the ball. It's almost like they stop thinking and just have to do. What do you think? Will we see gradually more of that as these guys grow up and become more comfortable?
I think you will see more of the tempo stuff early in a game if they can get first downs off it. And because it makes, you know, if you're going three and out, there's no tempo. So if this team remains in close games, yeah, I think you'll see a little bit more of it, but I think also they do want to shorten the game a little bit by holding on to the ball. So I think you'll find a nice little mixture of stuff.
For you coming up in the TU feature on Allen Robinson. What else?
Allen Robinson feature in Sunday's paper, and then yesterday for the Insider, I talked to Robert Saleh, the linebackers coach, about what's his week been like without Paul Posluszny in the middle. What's his schedule like? I mean, for example, he met with JT Thomas and Jeremiah George at 6:15 Wednesday morning, 6:15 Thursday morning, as he does with the Mike linebackers.
Like we do before the show.
Oh, typically. Yeah. Extensive prep. 6:15. So that's what we got going in. So, you know, should be interesting to read.
All right. We'll absolutely be looking for that. Follow Ryan on Twitter for all the latest breaking Jaguar news as well, at Ryan O'Halloran. For Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, feel better. We will see. Hopefully you'll be back tonight for the Mike Davidson Ford Friday Night Lights scoreboard show. Lauren, tonight, or you're out in Yulee again, right?
That is correct. I'm taking my show on the road to Yulee along with Andrew Gibson and Marty Pullman.
All right, there you go. And we'll see you for the Jaguar pregame. And
I cannot wait. It's the first time we're tailgating after a victory.
It will be epic, and we'll see all of you out
there. We'll
see
what kind of food you get.
You know, as long as it's not stinky fish, I'll be fine, I think, this week. So, Lauren, great job as always. We got the boys of XL Primetime coming up. Thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac. They bring you Jaguars today. And thanks to our friends at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships who present the Fan Feedback Spotlight on a daily basis as well. So, Joe C., Ryan the Hacker, and T-Wig coming up next right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.